happened that way, that sort of got pushed down and subjugated to this other approach, which seemed to be a better way for people to make a buck, like efficiency engineers pointed out. Time study, you think, you show you could save this, you could save. And you always, in time study, you always show how much money you can save. You don't really tell how much you're going to spend in order to save that money. You don't mention that. So maybe we would have had this sort of development, and maybe we would have had an interest in information flow and everything else much earlier. It may have come about earlier. Marx was always interested in information flow, but it didn't seem that he didn't fit in with the current trends of the time. The trends of the time were also analysis of time study, and then Newton came along, motion analysis, and you had a lot of this sort of focus on the minutiae. Now, Marx's idea of looking at the flow of information and how it moves from place to place and this and that was never really utilized fully, and then Marx dropped out after 1923, got discussion with the whole thing at the Taylor time. And therefore, that all had to come about much later. And that's where I think I would say that we would have had a different kind of development, which might have led to an even more better development, and we wouldn't have to wait until development. Doing it now, after we had to wait till systems analysis and so forth became a thing of interest, it would have probably developed a lot earlier. We would have known more about how information is important in an organization and in a fact.
We only have time for maybe one questions, depending upon the response. So let's kind of throw one up in the air and see if someone has an issue that they'd like to address.
Anything.
We're going to give you a moment or two for a closing comment, perhaps.
Good morning, Dr. Reg.
No, let them say something. Go ahead.
My name is Larry Falk, and I have a question. We've read a lot of stuff about Taylor, and it's usually in opposition to what you've put forth in your article. Who might be another person that we can look at in a different light in our management history?
I talked about Elton Mayo. You can look at him. I don't think he's very bright. I see, I've only looked at people like, I still am very interested in the Hawthorne stuff because I think nobody really understands it, I'm the only one that does. It's a thing that is a mythology that never happened, and it's only the result of a poor sentence system and a bunch of smart girls in the house that manipulate it, and a bunch of supervisors who are trying to make a name for themselves that don't really tell people that they really know what's going on here. But that's all going to get them a promotion, so they keep a mystery. So I must say, I don't know how to answer your question, because I imagine if you looked at any one of these people carefully, you might find that they don't have very, very good foundations. That their foundations are not based on really what they have done or by their own, but what someone else has done. I would, of course, now Traher wrote a book on Mayo, and you do have a problem with Mayo versus those examples. See, the problem you have with looking at some people is that, see, the longer you are dead, usually, the less resistance that you're going to get if you start poking into that person. That person, one, is still alive. He doesn't like you to poke into him. He doesn't want you to poke into him. You really have to wait till he's deceased. And then after he's deceased, your father's got to be what happened to all the original records that he had. I mean, and then we also have a problem today with computers and things like that, where a lot of things are really on discs and they're not handwritten things and et cetera. But they may be hard copy, but you don't even know who typed that in. But what I mean is, I think I don't know who you could look at. I mean, I was, well, just to say, with Mayo, the problem is that when I first started to look at Mayo, and I eventually realized that I couldn't cover everything in my dissertation, I found out that a lot of his records had already been thrown away, so to make sure that nobody would ever see him. And that's in the 1950s. So by now, a lot of them are probably gone forever. I think if you take any, you have to pick a person to see. That's the first thing. And then I will look at it this way. You have to first look and see if any of his papers are anywhere. And you have to really look around. And that's another problem I find. A lot of people are so interested in looking through computer databases and stuff like that. They think that everything is in some archive someplace. But that stuff in the archive has to come from somewhere. It has to come from an attic or a basement or a den. And somebody has to turn it over to that archive. And it has to come from this guy's office when he dies on the train and doesn't get there and somebody cleans the office out. That's how it's going to come about. But usually, after you would find it, what's in a public archive and what is it, then you have to go and look at what residue could be found elsewhere. I mean, in his personal possessions or relatives or children or something like that. Then you have to start looking for those people. And then you have to look at his will and see what he left his possessions to. And then you have to look at in turn to see who owns the plot. And maybe those people have his records. And you have to do a lot of work. But then, you see, by that time, you're getting, this man is dead, or this woman, whoever this life person might be, and now there's a less resistance to you to look into it. If he's alive, you never get to it. But and then whoever you pick, I think it doesn't matter who you would pick. There's a big contribution to be made by people who really don't know about, and maybe other people just picked up their ideas, like Richard A. Feist, and used later on in life, and Feist himself never became a big name. I mean, not today, anyway. He was big in his time. But what I mean is you have to, whoever it is, you've got to go and find what happened to that residue left behind. But that's usually where everything is. It's in the residue. It's in the boxes. It's in the file drawers. It's in the desk. Or whatever. I found some stuff in New York City at the Society of Advanced Management that was deposited there in 1926 by a nearby Kevin Balding. Died of a heart attack on the street, and his wife gave his briefcases to them to preserve. Well, they could have sold that closet, but it stayed in that closet from 1960, from 1926. You know, all right. And when you open it up, there you get an idea of what somebody's doing at some time, because he didn't have time to clean it out. He wasn't capable even of alive.
Well, Chuck, we're out of time. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this. There appear to be some very engaged students here as well, enjoying the time that we've been able to spend with you.
Can I just say one thing?
Please.
Forget about your time barrier. I would say this, that if anybody's going to do anything, they should really try to do something original for what, and they should bend all efforts to find something different, and that's what my main advice would be, and that anybody can find something different if they just apply themselves, and that takes a couple of risks down the line.
Well, you're wonderful. We're going to express our appreciation. I hope the bleeding is stopped.
I think so. But the next time I read that article about the high speed.
Well, okay.
All right.
Give me my best.
All right, then.
Thank you, Chuck.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.